The Possessed by Fyodor Dostoevsky. Part 2. Chapter 1. Night. 8 days had passed. Now that it is all over and I am writing a record of it, we know all about it. But at the time we knew nothing, and it was natural that many things should seem strange to us. Stepan Trofimovich and I, anyway, shut ourselves up for the first part of the time and looked on with dismay from a distance. I did, indeed, go about here and there, and as before, brought him various items of news, without which he could not exist. I need hardly say that there were rumors of the most varied kind going about the town in regard to the blow that Stavrogin had received, Lizaveta Nikolaevna's fainting fit, and all that happened on that Sunday. But what we wondered was, through whom the story had got about so quickly and so accurately. Not one of the persons present had any need to give away the secret of what had happened, or interest to serve by doing so. The servants had not been present. Lebyadkin was the only one who might have chattered, not so much from spite, for he had gone out in great alarm, and fear of an enemy destroys spite against him, but simply from incontinence of speech. But Lebyadkin and his sister had disappeared next day, and nothing could be heard of them. There was no trace of them at Filipov's house, they had moved, no one knew where, and seemed to have vanished. Shadov, of whom I wanted to inquire about Marya Timofeyevna, would not open his door, and I believe sat locked up in his room for the whole of those 8 days, even discontinuing his work in the town. He would not see me. I went to see him on Tuesday and knocked at his door. I got no answer, but being convinced by unmistakable evidence that he was at home, I knocked a second time. Then, jumping up, apparently from his bed, he strode to the door and shouted at the top of his voice, "Shadov is not at home." With that I went away. Stepan Trofimovich and I, not without dismay at the boldness of the supposition, though we tried to encourage one another, reached at last a conclusion. We made up our mind that the only person who could be responsible for spreading these rumors was Pyotr Stepanovich, though he himself not long after assured his father that he had found the story on everyone's lips, especially at the club, and that the governor and his wife were familiar with every detail of it. What is even more remarkable is that the next day, Monday evening, I met Lipyadin, and he knew every word that had been passed, so that he must have heard it firsthand. Many of the ladies, and some of the leading ones, were very inquisitive about the mysterious cripple, as they called Marya Timofeyevna. There were some, indeed, who were anxious to see her and make her acquaintance, so the intervention of the persons who had been in such haste to conceal the Lebyadkins was timely. But Lizaveta Nikolaevna's fainting certainly took the foremost place in the story, and all society was interested, if only because it directly concerned Yulia Mihailovna, as the kinswoman and patroness of the young lady. And what was there they didn't say? What increased the gossip was the mysterious position of affairs. Both houses were obstinately closed. Lizaveta Nikolaevna, so they said, was in bed with brain fever. The same thing was asserted of Nikolai Saevolodovich, with the revolting addition of a tooth knocked out and a swollen face. It was even whispered in corners that there would soon be murder among us, that Stavrogin was not the man to put up with such an insult, and that he would kill Shadov, but with the secrecy of a Corsican vendetta. People liked this idea, but the majority of our young people listened with contempt, and with an air of the most nonchalant indifference, which was, of course, assumed. The old hostility to Nikolai Saevolodovich in the town was in general strikingly manifest. Even sober-minded people were eager to throw blame on him, though they could not have said for what. It was whispered that he had ruined Lizaveta Nikolaevna's reputation, and that there had been an intrigue between them in Switzerland. Cautious people, of course, restrained themselves, but all listened with relish. There were other things said, though not in public, but in private, on rare occasions and almost in secret, extremely strange things, to which I only refer to warn my readers of them with a view to the later events of my story. Some people, with knitted brows, said God knows on what foundation, that Nikolai Saevolodovich had some special business in our province, that he had, through Count K, been brought into touch with exalted circles in Petersburg, that he was even, perhaps, in government service, and might almost be said to have been furnished with some sort of commission from someone. When very sober-minded and sensible people smiled at this rumor, observing very reasonably that a man always mixed up with scandals, and who was beginning his career among us with a swollen face, did not look like a government official, they were told in a whisper that he was employed not in the official, but, so to say, the confidential service, and that in such cases it was essential to be as little like an official as possible. This remark produced a sensation. We knew that the Zemstvo of our province was the object of marked attention in the capital. I repeat, These were only flitting rumors that disappeared for a time when Nikolai Saevolodovich first came among us. But I may observe that many of the rumors were partly due to a few brief but malicious words, vaguely and disconnectedly dropped at the club by a gentleman who had lately returned from Petersburg. This was a retired captain in the Guards, Artemy Pavlovich Gaganov. He was a very large...